Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Governor Tony Evers tells state agencies to not spend $250 million as a hedge against slowing tax collections caused by COVID-19. But UW System President Tommy Thompson says new cuts in state aid would hurt plans to keep students and faculty safe this fall. How much did laid-off Wisconsin workers get with that additional $600 weekly jobless benefit? State officials say two Capitol statues torn down in June will be restored and replaced. Rewind, your week in review for July 24.
I'm Steve Walters.
I'm Patrick Marley.
And I want to thank Patrick for sitting in for the vacationing JR. Patrick, thank you very much. Okay. As always, plenty of news. Let's start with the order yesterday from Governor Evers, Patrick, that GPR, general fund agencies, should withhold $250 million. But I want to put that in perspective, Patrick, and I want to get your reaction. When I go to the Fiscal Bureau summary of this two-year budget, authorized expenditures in this fiscal year, fiscal 21, $19.2 billion. So when the governor asks for $250 million to be sequestered, withheld, whatever, Patrick, let me check again. Now, that's only 1.3%. That's pretty low, isn't it?
Well, it would seem that way, but, you know, there's a lot of difficulties. If you're running a prison system, which is $1 billion a year, more than $1 billion a year, it's hard to find places to cut. Every time you know, if you were to put a staff member on furlough, for instance, you've got to backfill that job and pay that person at overtime. So that's not a great solution. And it's hard, you know, prisons already are running with a lower staff than they would like. So to find savings there are pretty difficult because obviously the risks are high. You know, it wasn't too long ago that a couple of people escaped from Columbia Correctional Institution. Now that wasn't related to staffing, but that would raise concerns for you if you were running a prison as to where you're going to make those cuts.
And I think you reported that as a result of that escape, six people got fired, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
Warden of the prison retired early amid a personnel investigation. So it was a significant problem they had there.
Okay. But let's go back. The governor had ordered from the last fiscal budget ending on June 30, $70 million. And as we'll talk about Tommy Thompson's reaction later, the UW system said, hey, we came up with a 40 of that $70 million. So I just find it really interesting. But when you talk to Fiscal Bureau, Patrick, they say, well, as you and I both ask, when are you going to come up with new revenue estimates, which would be the basis of a budget repair bill? And Bob Lang just sent me a very quick email, like four words: new revenue estimates in August. So talk about the process after that, please.
So, I mean, the thing is that we got to keep in mind is we are just scratching the surface here. This is $250 million now, this $70 million before. Those are just kind of to keep things at bay until the Fiscal Bureau and the Department of Revenue have a handle on how bad the state's finances are. They're expected to be problematic. I think a budget repair bill is something that is pretty widely expected, probably not until after the election. But it's hard to know how to readjust your budget if you don't know how bad the problem is. And, taxes weren't due until July 15th this year because it was extended because of COVID. And so we really haven't heard how bad the state's finances are.
Well co-chair, I'm sorry, Patrick.
It's going to get worse, I'm just saying, in terms of the amount of cuts they're going to have to make, most likely.
Yep, thanks. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Joint Finance Co-Chairman John Nygren said he's not impressed with the Evers order to cut $250 million. He's thrown out the possibility of freezing state authorized general fund expenditures at the fiscal 2020, which ended June 30 level, and that was $18.38 billion. So it's a difference of, in other words, $850 million more in spending was authorized from fiscal 20, which ended June 30, to fiscal 21, which ends the next June 20. Do you see any consensus for Nygren's throwing out that let's freeze spending?
Yeah, so he's been talking about that for a while, but, you know, toward the tail end of the last fiscal year, he was saying that's a good idea because his premise is rather than having to make cuts, let's just don't increase spending as we had as previously planned to do. Now, the challenge to that, you know, part of that increase in spending is aid to schools, and those school districts are counting on that money. They have got classes starting this fall, virtually in many places. But they've put together planning, assuming they will get more state aid than they have in the past. So there's a ripple effect there if you do that. Also, I think it's important to keep in mind that at a time when revenue is dropping for the state and local governments, they're seeing their costs increase, right? Everybody's trying to buy PPE and do other things related to coronavirus, maybe change up their operations because they have to have their staff working from home. That's made their expenses go up at a time where they're supposed to be making cuts.
Okay, and now let's look at two comments made both by the governor and UW System President Tommy Thompson. Let's quote the governor first. Why do we need to withhold or sequester $250 million? State and local governments are now experiencing the difficult balance of providing vital services to residents in crisis while also managing tough fiscal realities. While I am still hopeful that the federal government will adopt further bipartisan proposals to stabilize funding, we must take these steps and make more significant cuts. Two sentences from UW System President Tommy Thompson. Our universities are doing everything we can to provide an in-person classes safely this fall, and reductions in state support for the UW system are an obstacle to that. Last sentence, the UW system has already borne a disproportionate share of state cuts, referring to the fact that in the last budget year sequester, $40 million allegedly of the $70 million came from the UW. Patrick, a few weeks before the governor asked for this additional $250 in the current fiscal year, former Governor Thompson said the UW system needs an additional $110 million to safely protect students and faculty. Talk to me about this back and forth.
Well, that's exactly the point I was just trying to make, is that the university just had to weather these cuts, and they did take a disproportionate share of the last round of cuts. Meanwhile, they're seeing a need for increased expenses because of coronavirus. They say $110 million. And so they're going to have to take a share of this $250 million, and it could be even worse if there's a budget repair bill. And so it's a real problem for, lawmakers, for the governor, and for the UW system, as well as every other state operation. Now, the governor does raise an interesting point there. He is holding out some hope that Congress may give additional aid to states. Wisconsin got $3 billion through the CARES package. A lot of that Governor Evers himself had direct control of. Other portions of it went directly to schools or directly to local governments or to specific state programs. He's still got $200 or $300 million left of that to spend. One possibility is that Congress would take some of the restrictions off and give him and other governors broader leeway on how to spend that. They could also throw in new money in some kind of new package. But, what Congress will do seems completely unclear at this point. Do you think, Steve, that they're going to get more money here that will help the states out, or a bailout, as some Republicans would call it?
Well, the U.S. House passed an additional $3 trillion, and Mitch McConnell says we're coming out with a package of $1 trillion, but the devil will be in those details. Just a note yesterday, Patrick, the governor was asked, will Department of Workforce Development, be subject to these, be subject to the $250 million savings order? He said no. Just give us a very short summary of why he said no.
Well, the Department of Workforce Development is responsible for cutting the unemployment checks and for ascertaining when people do qualify for unemployment, and they have a massive backlog. We've talked to people who have been waiting months for checks for problems that they say are non-existent or that are, could be easily cleared up. Many states are facing backlogs. It's particularly acute in Wisconsin. And so any cuts to the state agency that oversees that would likely mean more delays because, they'd have fewer people or they'd have less money to do the judgment as to who gets a payment and who doesn't.
Okay, new subject. COVID-19, the pandemic, covers basically everything we're going to talk about today with one exception. So, but let's hear from the governor yesterday on, well, he said, there's no conspiracy, folks. You can put on a mask right now. But anyway, let's hear the governor from Secretary Palm and the governor on the increasing need they believe for all of us, even though he's only considering a statewide mask order, on the need to wear a mask and take other safety precautions. Please.
The continued trend this week of record day increases in positive cases
is dangerous, unsustainable, and dilutes the months of effort all of you put into staying home. It's on all of us to decide what the weeks and months ahead are going to look like in Wisconsin. And we cannot continue down the path we're on. There's no conspiracy, folks. Wearing a mask, face mask, will help protect the people around you. Frankly, folks can right now put on a mask if you don't have one. There's nothing to prevent you from doing it.
We are now at 878 deaths in the state of Wisconsin, which is an increase of 13 over yesterday. These numbers are at least in part a reflection of two patterns. A significant number of cases that reported attending gatherings like parties and bars and barbecues, and an increase in cases among young people. In all confirmed cases within the past month here in Wisconsin, fully one-third of them have been people in their 20s.
Urgency, Patrick, as we noted in the governor's comments and Secretary Palm's comments, to wear masks, because for the first time twice in recent days, we had more than 1,000 positive, 1,117, 1,052. Some people saw 1,000 as a benchmark. It's continuing to spread. We have some hot spots. The governor, it was interesting, Patrick, he said, he was asked, if you knew you could legally issue a statewide mask order, would you hesitate to do it? He said, no, I'd do it in a minute. Finally, he said, if President Trump does not reauthorize paying for the National Guard, which has, I think, conducted hundreds of thousands of COVID testing, the state would have to look for that. And two more points I want to make before I turn it over to you, Patrick. The five largest teachers unions, Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, Kenosha, Racine, said to protect our students, to protect our teachers, to protect our administrators, we need to go online, at least initially reopen online. And then last comment, Patrick, we heard from Senator Dewey Strobel, who held a hearing with teachers and administrators yesterday, and issued this statement from Republican Senator Dewey Strobel. It is clear that traditional in-person instruction is the preferred option for most families and students. Sorry to dominate, Patrick. What's your take on all this back and forth?
Well, on the mask issue, you know, the governor says, essentially is saying he's not going to do it because he's concerned that Republicans who control the legislature would sue him, as they did over his stay-at-home order and the stay-at-home order that his administration issued, and they succeeded in the Supreme Court by a one-vote margin in knocking down the stay-at-home order. Now, you know, the governor, I don't think, has addressed this, but on August 1st, the makeup of the state Supreme Court changes. A liberal, Jill Karoski, replaces a conservative, Daniel Kelly. And so, you know, does the governor get more aggressive? He hasn't really signaled that. He has raised concerns about being sued, but it would appear that he would have a better playing field if a question like this were to get to the state Supreme Court again. Very unpredictable, but does look like a better makeup of the court than he had previously.
Right. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, we're seeing mask mandates all over the country. The president has been talking about the importance of masks. He canceled the Republican National Convention this week in Jackson, or the Jacksonville portion of it. And so, you know, I don't. It doesn't look like either the governor or Republicans who run the legislature are going to push a mask requirement. At the same time, that could change. There have been lots of times, or especially early in the days of COVID, where the governor would say he wasn't going to do one thing and then 48 hours later do that very thing.
Yeah, some of these things can be best illustrated with graphics. So I want to thank Shelby Kissling of our staff for doing a second graph showing just the spike in the number of positives over the recent weeks. And that accompanying that is a chart which shows that one-third of recent cases are people in their 20s. Is this just people in their 20s, you think, Patrick, they've just got to get out and, how do we say, party? What do you think?
I do think that's an element to it. I think that there's more willingness to be social when you're young. Certainly when bars were open in Dane County, you saw some real problems there, and that led to a local shutdown of the bars again in Dane County. So that does seem to be a contributing factor. They're out there having more contact with more people, and that's how this disease spreads.
Okay. Patrick, you and I as reporters, as Dan Bice always says, we are naturally curious people. So I wondered, how much had Wisconsin residents collected in the additional 600 weekly stipend. Now, let's be clear. That's in addition to our maximum state unemployment benefit of $370. So $370 plus $600 for a number of weeks. But that ends effective tomorrow. So I asked Department of Workforce Development, and here's what they said. 435,000 Wisconsin residents got over the period that started, I think, in late March, $1.89 billion. Or if you divide that, that's roughly $4,300 per claimant. Now, Patrick, you know, you and I are wonks. I looked up Wisconsin's gross domestic product for 2019. It was $347.3 billion. So that $1.89 billion is 0.5%. Not much, but it's very significant to families bridging that gap whose income earners were laid off, right?
It's a huge, huge help to those families. I mean, think about it. If you are laid off because of COVID and you're just getting the state benefit, you might get $300 a month. I'm sorry, a week, $300 a week.
Right, right.
And then you get the $600 in federal aid on top of that. That brings you to $900 a week. That is much easier to make sure you have food on the table and your kids are clothed and you're paying your rent or your mortgage than if you're getting just the $300 a week. Like you said, that all ends on Saturday unless Congress reauthorizes it. And it looks like one possibility is that Congress will reauthorize it at a lower amount. So you get more than the $300, but perhaps an extra $200 rather than an extra $600 a week.
Yeah. That's undecided because you have some of the Republicans in the Senate saying you shouldn't be offering income replacement that pays more than people were actually earning prior to the COVID crisis. So I think the figure was thrown out. If there is new supplemental, instead of 600, it would be 70% of what you were earning before the crisis. But House Democrats, part of their $3 trillion bill passed weeks ago, wouldn't that continue the 600 through January, or have I got it wrong?
You're right. The House package that the Democrats passed would have the extra $600 until early 2021. I'm not sure if it's January or February. And there might be kind of a weaning off of that or a trigger for when the unemployment rate gets to a certain level, but certainly would extend it for the foreseeable future. You're right about what Republicans in the Senate are concerned about, because there are many people, you know, lower wage workers get more money when they're on unemployment than when they're working their job. And the Republicans say, well, that just discourages people from coming into work. They don't want to return to the workforce when they're making more doing nothing. Now, the counter argument to that is these people say, well, first of all, I was putting out of my job because of what the government did in response to this coronavirus. Also, in many cases, you don't want me going back to work. You want to control the spread of the disease. You want me to stay at home. Therefore, it's good to have it. You know, it's not the way we normally think about economics, but there's an argument that it is what the government wants right now, is to induce people to stay at home.
Yeah. Okay. New subject. The governor, as you said, was given control under one of the first Washington-approved CARES COVID relief packages. The governor's had almost total control of about $2 billion. So I want to walk through, and yeah, there's a lot of numbers on this graphic, but I think it's important. I want to walk through how the governor has spent the biggest items. And Patrick, jump in on each of these items, or we can wait until the end. Biggest item, hospital community preparedness reserve, $445 million. Now, Patrick, this sounds like a hedge against the extreme hospital costs of a second wave. Have I got that right, do you think?
Yes, I think that's right. And some of that money went toward, for instance, creating field hospitals. You know, there was one prepared at State Fair Park. And
which was never used, correct? I'm sorry to interrupt you. Okay,
correct.
Excuse me.
And
go ahead.
You know, I guess I would add that the coronavirus isn't over yet. So let's, you know, there will be questions about whether that was money well spent if it is never used. But, you know, we don't know what the future holds. I'm curious about that 400 some million for hospital preparation, mm-hmm. as to how much of it is actually allocated and could be repurposed. If we don't see the kinds of surges that were, you know, that health officials have been worried about, would they be able to reclaim some of that money and send it elsewhere? But that is the biggest piece of it, yes.
Okay, let's walk through the rest of the items. Testing, $260 million. Reimbursed state agencies for COVID costs, $200 million. Local government aid grants, $190 million. PPE and ventilators, $190 million. Other health providers, $110 million. Small business grants, this is the program administered by WEDC, Economic Development Corporation. Contract tracing, $75 million. Grants to farmers, and the food insecurity program, $65 million. Then yesterday, I'm kind of confused, the governor's press release referred to $80 million grants to K-12 and higher education for schools. Patrick, this leaves, well, you and I covered Assembly Leader Steinicke saying, look, this still leaves the governor in control of $280 million, which is why there should be bridge loans to those that haven't received unemployment benefits. So how do you see, is the governor, do you think the governor is keeping 280, 250 in reserve against whether we get another very serious COVID wave? What's your thought on the 280 or 250 million that the governor hasn't spent yet?
So it's interesting because he has to have that money allocated by the end of the calendar year. Otherwise, it has to go back to Washington. I'm confident that the governor will do everything he can to prevent having to return money to the feds. I think he's hanging back with some of that money to see how this illness progresses over the coming months. Do they find that, you know, they didn't need as much for hospitals as they thought, or they need to buy more PPE, or that they need to give some kind of additional aid to local governments or to restaurant owners or to restaurant workers or to renters. You know, he had money to help people pay their rent or to address the unemployment situation. And so I think he's kind of trying to hang on to the money to see what another thing he might want to do with it is it's possible Congress, as it argues over whether to extend more aid to the states, will just say, well, the money we already gave you, you're more free to spend that. And then he could use that for the state's budget problems that we talked about before. So I think he's taking a little bit of a wait and see approach before deciding what to do with it.
When UW System President Tommy Thompson asked for an additional $110 million, he was asking for this $280 or $250 the governor still has in reserve, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, let's move forward. In the wake of June protests, a board that you and I rarely covered, but it's important, the State Capitol Executive Residence Board has decided to go ahead and restore the two statues, Forward on State Street and Colonel Hans Christian Hegde on the other end of the Capitol, restore those. And at that SCRB meeting, we'll hear excerpts from that in a little bit. It talked about the graffiti, the broken windows, the broken doors to the Capitol. It was just interesting, Patrick. The Capitol has been closed since mid-March. If any of those protesters would have gotten into the Capitol, we don't really know how much damage they would have done. The staffers of SCRB, State Capitol and Executive Residence Board, don't have a total damage estimate yet, but we're going ahead to restore those statues. What's the symbolism here, my friend?
Well, I mean, there's a, there's no greater sign of what tumult our country is in right now. That you have these large protests, many of them peaceful. Sometimes they turn violent. Sometimes they turn to looting. And you know, in this case, you had a statue taken down that, in many people's eyes, is an homage to women's rights and to women's suffrage, and another statue that was honoring an abolitionist. So, you know, it's not like taking down a Confederate statue. You know, there's a lot of Republican resentment over that happening, that the Madison police didn't intervene and stop those statues being desecrated. And there is bipartisan support for restoring these statues and getting them back up. I think there's some real concern among Republicans that, I think Mark Bourne, a member of the board, said this, that they put them up and that they get taken down again by protesters. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out. Do they try to do anything in the budget to put more protections for those statues, or hit Madison with cuts to state aid if the statues are damaged again?
Well, You and I have been covering the Capitol for a while. We're coming up on next February and March, the 10-year protests against Act 10. Do you see any irony in that both those statues survived the Act 10 protests, or am I overreaching, Catherine?
Well, certainly the forward statue got a lot of decoration during Act 10. She was wearing a lot of signs and those kinds of things, but she didn't have paint dumped on her that I recall, or get taken down like she has in this case. And there were a lot more people out for a more sustained period during Act 10. There wasn't damage. The damage to the Capitol during Act 10 was minimal. There was some sort of advanced, not weathering of the Capitol, but advanced wear on the Capitol because you had so many people there for such a long time. But it was actually quite remarkable that there wasn't more damage to the Capitol just from having that many people inside it for so long.
Yeah, I still recommend that people read the book you and Jason Stein wrote, more than they bargained for. Just a final note on this before we hear actually from some of the SCURB debate. The Historical Society has volunteered to organize fundraising and donations, which would be tax deductible to restore the statues. We don't know, number one, when the statues will be restored, because unfortunately, Mr. Hegg's head is still missing and has to be recast. But now let's listen to some give and take as SCURB members talk about the decision to restore the statues. And as Patrick said, the concern of Republican Representative Mark Bourne. Please.
The Hans Christian Hegg statue, we are still missing the head, and we are looking at efforts to restore through a casting process through an existing statue that's located in the town of Norway.
I'm not comfortable really replacing some of these things until we believe that either DOA or the proper authorities in the city have a plan to protect the property, because I would hate to see us recast statues and 9 months later watch them get dragged down the road again.
I 100% agree that they need to be restored, but I also think that part of the puzzle is to make sure that there's security in place, because to keep doing this makes not an ounce of sense.
Patrick, we got about a minute and a half to talk about, to look forward a little bit. Primary elections, August 11th, of course, and just a plug, Wisconsin Eye has got interviews with more than 90 candidates on the August 11th primary ballot. That's accessible at wisi.org. Sorry for the shameless plug, Patrick, but I want to come back to this. The president has now announced that, is it 35 DHS officers will be assigned to Milwaukee? And Attorney General Josh Call said, "Not, please don't come here." The governor said, "Please don't come here." Do you see this as a major issue as we look ahead over the next week or two?
Absolutely. And Attorney General Josh Call said more than "please don't come here." I believe he used the word "fascist." So he had very strong reaction to it. Milwaukee local officials are not excited about it either. So yes, I think this will be an issue. You know, obviously Portland has been in the headlines because of federal agents showing up there, not identifying themselves, using unmarked cars. What protesters say are kidnapping people who are not on federal property. So, you know, a lot is going to depend on how it's carried out here. You know, Chicago, there was a lot of resistance to doing this. And then I think the mayor there met with some federal prosecutors and had fewer concerns than she did initially. So I think a lot of the question is, what are these agents doing and how fully are they integrated into, you know, the law enforcement system that we have in Milwaukee?
It's been an amazing news year, hasn't it, Patrick?
It sure has, and it's only halfway over.
It's only halfway over. I'm Steve Walters.
I'm Patrick Marley.
I want to thank Patrick for filling in for the vacationing JR. That's Rewind for July 24.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.